I believe in high buy-in. I want you to believe that you want to be more successful in your seat and in your life than I do for you. And then from that, I, as a leader, had to figure out, how do I create a paradigm to make decisions? I didn't want everything to be one-offs. I wanted them to be holistic and consistent. And so when we look at fair and generous, they're two sides of the same coin. If you have someone who's constantly being generous, but they don't know how to keep the standard of fair, they're going to feel taken advantage of. If you have an organization that's only looking at the numbers, only looking at the accountables and deliverables, and not looking at the person, people are going to feel used and abused.
Totally.
And so what we've done is we look at seats and not names, and we look at the accountability chart, and we say, okay, based on fair market value, here's what fair would be. Based on holistically generosity, here's what we want to do for this person. And so it's allowing us to start with the seat first and then look at the person within that.
If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, but have never actually reached out, I encourage you to make today that day. See, taking your business to the next level takes a whole lot more than just listening to a podcast. It takes coaching on your goals. It takes proper implementation of those ideas, and it takes a like-minded peer group who's been where you're about to go. So stop playing around with your business and let's take this thing seriously. Book a call below and let's start the conversation.
You're listening to Contract Revolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less.
Mr. Blake, welcome to Contract Revolution. Love having you, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
It's good to be here, my friend.
Stoked for this chat. When we prepped, we talked about a lot of things. And one of the things we narrowed in on is just your overall leadership style and the way that you guys lead and run Churchill. And I wanted to get into that today. So before we do, let's let everybody know a bit about who you are. What is Churchill? Why did you get this thing started? And actually, I'm curious too, like, what kind of place did you want this to be when you first started your business all those years ago?
No, that's awesome. I'm a former middle school, high school pastor, right? Love serving people. People are my passion. Transitioned out of ministry, got into door-to-door roofing sales, and it terrified me. Went from speaking in front of thousands of people on a Sunday, being televised globally, to trying to door knock. And I was the most ridiculous guy ever. Be like, hi, me, Blake, roof damaged. And I'm like, I'm good at talking to people, man. What is this? And so got into door-to-door sales. Love the idea of solving big problems for people, right? You get paid for the size of the problem you solve. Loved the two companies that I was a part of, but we weren't engaging and connecting with homeowners and team members the way I longed. And so we started Churchill USA back in 2020. And it's been a vision of how do we holistically take care of people better, both our internal team and our homeowners. There was a gap in the customer service experience that they were having. And for me, that's what matters. You're in their home, you're in their lives. We do large standing seam metal roofs, 2-3 week projects, and you get to know these people. And so for us, it was a vision of, is there a better way? Can you do discipleship differently and holistically in a business in a way that you can't do in a church? And so that's where Churchill USA started. It was me betting on myself, being a guy who grew up in poverty to a degree. And so I wanted the security of a paycheck and then taking the risk to bet on myself and saying, hey, I want to get paid what I'm worth. And then the next big step was saying, can I actually build a business, which is scary and terrifying? And then allowing the people to systematically come around that and see where we're at today. So it's been a fun journey.
And I've gotten to know you a lot, especially on the road. We've been, I feel like I got to know you better almost before you even became a member. But when did
random conferences, right? Houston, we met in Houston. There was a conference going on. And again, being in ministry, all the main people for conferences are in the lobby during the speakers.
Yeah.
And so I always hang out in the lobby. You and I connected. And then I ran into you again at an event in Texas. And you came and gave me a big hug and you broke my sunglasses. You remember that?
That's what we do. We'd be so, friends. Friends are anyways, but that's what, like, I do. I was like, this guy's good.
Go.
He didn't punch me in the face.
It was awesome.
It's good. Yeah. And when do you think things started to become more real as a leader for you? Because at the beginning, it was just you, was it not? And then you started to build a team around you. When did that start where you actually started to lead a team?
That's good. That's fun. We started in 2020. It was me actually sitting in this office with three friends saying, hey, here's what I'm doing. Do you want to do it? Come along. No training, no script, just giving guys an opportunity. Sent out a Facebook request saying, I don't know how to use QuickBooks. Can anyone help me out? and a lady I was in a prayer ministry with. And I say this with love. When I looked at her, I did not see an admin, a PC in any capacity. I saw her as a friend. She reached out and was like, "Hey, I think I can help you." I was like, "All right." And I got a text and I was like, texted her. I said, "Hey, when are you free to meet?" And she's like, "Who is this?" I was like, "I'll give you three guesses." And 2 minutes later, she's like, "Hey, Blake, how are you?" She'd reverse engineered my phone number, looked up who I was, and reached out. And that was the beginning of us starting a team. The reality of us saying, "Hey, let's build a company," really was 3 years ago. There's a guy on my team, my ops guy, Danny, was transitioning out of church. And that was the first big financial investment of my wife and I saying, "You know what? Let's actually try to do this thing. Let's not put on the brakes. Let's not try to hold back. Let's see what we can do." And I was pressure washing my fence in my front yard. I was just got done reading the book from Hobby Lobby, where the owner talked about the business of Hobby Lobby. He didn't own the tree, but he ate from the fruit. And so I knew spiritually and discerning, hey, I'm not producing something out of myself. I get to steward something that I feel like I'm responsible for. And that's when we began to figure out who are the right people on this team. Danny came in, former pastor, CrossFit coach. We used to be student pastors, different churches in town. And I knew him from a ministry standpoint. I didn't know him from a business standpoint. We competed in a couple CrossFit competitions together, and he has a tremendous heart for people. And I knew he was going to be a cornerstone to us building his business. I'm a visionary, right? I herd cats. I dream things. He can take my chaos and create a linear pathway for it. And so that's when we got our yin and yang, that balance. The beauty in that is we have a mutual respect as friends. We talk about personal and professional hats. We love and respect each other personally, and we can shift over professionally and have conflict. And that's really when we began to say, hey, how do we build a business? And that's where our journey with BTA came in. We've developed things. I had a student ministry of 400 kids every week, 1,600 in a month. If you know anything about church ministry, that's top 1% of churches in the country. Like, it's a big organization. We knew we could build something, but we wanted to partner with someone who had gone before us. We wanted to partner with someone who had the culture that bled our blood. And that's when we stumbled along you guys. And to be honest, that investment is really when we said, hey, let's do this thing. And so I want to thank you and your team for saying yes all those years ago and allowing me and my team to actually begin to grow and invest in and take care of our families. So thank you, guys.
Dude, I've loved working with you. You're the core values of you and your organization very much line up with BTA very naturally, right? And so I think that's a big part of what we're going to talk about today. You know, when we did our prep call, there was something that you had said, and I might be phrasing this slightly different than you said this, but it really struck me. And I was like, there's so much meat here. You said you operate the business to be structurally fair, and yet you're emotionally generous. What does that mean to you? Can you explain that?
Yeah. We tried to figure out what are the pillars that we actually want to make decisions based off of. And so our first one is ownership. I believe in high buy-in. I want you to believe that you want to be more successful in your seat and in your life than I do for you. And then from that, I as a leader had to figure out, how do I create a paradigm to make decisions? I didn't want everything to be one-offs. I wanted them to be holistic and consistent. And so when we look at fair and generous, they're two sides of the same coin. If you have someone who's constantly being generous, but they don't know how to keep the standard of fair, they're going to feel taken advantage of. If you have an organization that's only looking at the numbers, only looking at the accountables and deliverables, and not looking at the person, people are going to feel used and abused.
Totally.
And so I'm a fair guy. Danny's the generous guy. In our org chart, he actually flipped it. And so it's generous and fair because he wants to put generosity first. And so what we've done is we look at seats and not names, and we look at the accountability chart, and we say, okay, based on fair market value, here's what fair would be. Based on holistically generosity, here's what we want to do for this person. And so it's allowing us to start with the seat first and then look at the person within that. And it's people, again, we just got done doing our all unicorn meeting. We were looking at the art of asking good questions, right? Curiosity, leaning in people. People do better when they're seen and cared for. They're buying into, do you holistically want to invest in and believe with them? But they also need a clear outline of what done looks like. This may be a rabbit trail, but there was a study. I'm a sociology major. There was a study at elementary school back in the day. And first semester, they had no fence around the playground. And all the kids played right next to the school because they didn't know where they were safe. They didn't know where that line of what we can do and what we can't do is. And then the next semester, they built the fence around the playground. And as you know it, all the kids went to the boundary of the fence. And so what we wanted to do as an organization is really create that clarity of, hey, here's what fair is. Here's what we need you guys to do. Here's where generosity is. And when you put those two together, when you're making decisions, it makes you kind of hit the mark every time. It's an ego check.
There's another podcast I did that with a guy had mentioned discretionary effort. You're unlocking people's, he said 40% of people's ability and effort is locked up in what they discern they want to give or not give. And so the more free you give basically people's ability to go express themselves, the more you can unlock that discretionary effort. But if it's just all freedom, it's a zoo. So it's like holding that within a structure. So I want to talk about that today. And let's start with the structural side of things. You already started to talk about this, but when it comes to clear roles and boundaries, like how has that influenced your team? Because I feel like I talk to a lot of people where it's like, we're going to have job descriptions and we're going to have goals every week and we're going to hold you accountable to it. And everyone's like, this sounds almost too structured for my team. It might kill my culture. How have you... Well, and I'm curious on your end, like how has that influenced your team? Where has that gone well? Maybe where has that not gone well in the pursuit of doing that?
Yeah, we're big E-Myth guys. So I love that book when we were starting this organization, How Do You Create an Org Chart, put names in each seat and position. And then it's giving our company and our team the freedom of knowing we've never been here before and we're growing. So this is what we think it is, but we don't know exactly what it's going to be. With Patrick Lencioni, we're big 5 dysfunctions of a team. When I interview on the get-go, we're setting the expectation that we want to holistically invest in you as a person. So I'll read their mail. I'll try to call out insecurities. I'll try to find out where their dreams and visions are. And from that, they know that we are fighting for each other. With org chart and time bound frames, what I've seen, and my older brother actually taught me this, a lot of people get caught up in building the system, but not implementing the system. And so they can spend hours working on an Excel sheet or creating SOPs, but not aptly implementing it. And so for us, it's that tension of what's actually going to produce us the most money or what's actually going to create the most value within our team today. Let's do that first. And then constantly evaluate. And so it's messy. We're a baby company, right? We're really looking at this 3 years in. We had an idea of what our org chart would be. Now we're seeing, okay, hey, how do we take the tribal knowledge, the thing that I've built or Emily, our PC, has built, and how do we actually implement that into a process and system in a way that our team can find it? And then you got to realize you got to train your team how to find it. The easy thing is just, hey, call the person and do the thing versus how do we equip you with the skills and an easy system to be able to solve the problem yourself? And that goes back down into the DNA of building in and believing in people. And so that's a lot of it.
Do you have a specific example of this, like something even maybe in the last few months where you're like, man, that really worked. And you just saw people open up and the freedom within their role and still the structure they needed to go and execute.
Honestly, going out of town. I know it's so silly. Just celebrated my 20th wedding anniversary, and we took the risk and went out of town for 3 weeks. And within that, you really see where your company's working, where the system is working, where the people feel ownership. We just debriefed it in our all unicorn meeting, and my ops guy said, I wasn't nervous, but it was new. And that's a beautiful way to frame it to your team. Hey, this isn't to be new. This isn't to be your first time doing it. Failure's okay. Nothing's going to be unbroken. And so that was a huge one for us as an organization. And within that, we have a new recruiting and onboarder who's training 4 guys through. He's been here 6 weeks. So he was doing it on his own. And it worked. That was the beauty of being able to look at him and say, like, see how far you guys have come. Can you maintain what you just did the last 3 weeks if I never come back again? And they said, yes. And I said, that means we have a healthy organization and our systems are working. Our new recruiting onboarding specialist, I looked at him when he first came in and said, hey, I'm kind of done developing new talent. And I know that sounds kind of harsh, but I'm paying you to accomplish this job. Here's the hours that you said you can do it in. Like, just go do it. And that was a big mental shift where I felt like I was being a jerk, to be honest with you. That's not in my DNA. I want everyone to win, but I know that I had to call him up in a new way. And the beauty of it is he thinks it's the best thing ever. Like, you see something in me, you trust me, you've given me the playbook, and you're going to let me go run with it. I'm like, absolutely, sink or swim. Whatever I can do to help you win, great, but this is on you. And so that's a part of it is, did you set them up? As a leader, I'm always questioning, did I actually set you up correctly? Mm-hmm. Is it an appropriate SOP? Did I train? Did I give you enough time? Is it dialed in? And once that's dialed in, then my expectation shifts and it's like, no, you can do this. I've learned my lesson. You've learned your lesson. Let's go do the thing.
Okay. So it's the two, it's duality, actually. It's like hyper focus on structure and systems and making sure that everything's clear, and then shifting to a lot of trust within them and that system and saying, hey, I'm going to hand the keys over to you. I think that's where a lot of people struggle, is they don't want to let go. Right. And then what happens is you strangle people's creativity and their independent thinking, and then suddenly they become bean counters for your organization. And then you put that label over them, and that's how they start showing up every day, because they just think that's what the job demands of them.
It's that's kind of been my 3-year journey with inviting the people in our key spots. So our operations manager, we have a project concierge who's kind of like a PM. No one's ever done this before. And so for me, I don't want to put the burden of an unknown on you so that you fail, while at the same time, I don't want to be the lid of your ability. And so part of it is have you spaced out the time and the seasonal growth to get to a spot where you can let go? And that's just a hard line to figure out, to be honest with you, because if they hatch too soon, they're going to fail. If they hatch too late, they're going to fail. But as long as you're emotionally connecting, we do it in our GSRs, our monthly meetings, our all unicorn meetings. If you can see where people are at and you're systematically growing them and allowing them to reflect back and see where they've grown and then affirm that in them, man, it's leaps and bounds. And that ownership piece is, I always tell them, I want you to get into a spot where you take it from me. That's when I know that you have it. And when my brain turns off, I'm not stressed about what you're doing. You're seeing the questions before I'm seeing the questions. That lets me know that you have ownership in your role and I can trust you. And if you fail, I don't care, because you care more about that outcome and I can let you run. But until I see that, I'm going to continue to guide you and be those guardrails to allow you to have that playground of that safety net to know that you're moving in the right direction.
You just said something that I think a lot of people maybe missed on, but like the words, I trust you, actually can go a very long way into somebody's self-confidence and ability to take things on. I remember saying this to a few people in my day, actually two things I say to them. When they're ready, it's just like, just so you know, from here forward, like I trust you. I trust your thought process. I trust the way your intentions, I trust what you want for this organization is what we want. I trust you. And you know what sometimes I back it up with is sometimes I'm like, and I need you. I need help. I need your help. Can you help me in this? And you just kind of like, you unlock some part of somebody where it's not just about them doing a job anymore. They're here with you to kind of go to battle, to go to war.
When you've done that in the past, were you talking professional trust, I trust you in your role, or were you talking personal trust, I trust you as a human and as a leader, that you have the skills and you have what it takes to figure it out?
That's a good question for me. I feel like I meant both, but when I look at it, so it's like Ashley Leach would be an example of this. She's works on our sales team. Professionally, it's both, because I'm looking at it as like professionally, I'm like, she's a year and a half in, she was kind of holding herself back and she was kind of just doing what I asked her to do, and that was it, no more, no less. And they kind of came down to like, actually, like, I trust you, like, I trust your ability to make decisions, I trust your ability to take what I say and go further with it if you need to. And then there's also on the personal side, I had a good relationship where we've always talked openly and freely about where we're at. And it's just like, I trust you to share with you the ins and outs of who I am and what I'm going through and who I am as a leader. And so that you can do the same. And so when you're feeling overwhelmed, we can talk about it. And I saw her shift in that. And she went from just kind of doing a job for us every single day to taking on a lot more of a leadership position actually on the sales team, to this point now where she's actually partially leading our sales team with our head of sales. And she just needed permission, was a good way to put it.
It's great. Yeah, we were saying this in our prep call. I really feel like being a small business owner is like being a father. And part of me wants to take marriage and parenting books and reverse engineer them to business practices, because it's all the same thing. There's a guy, John Gottman, and he talks about bids for affection, bids for attention. And if we're making a bid to our spouse to engage and connect, to say hi, and it's being rejected, we learn that it's not safe and we shut down. Same thing in the day-to-day with your team. When they're looking to celebrate, when they want to call and say hi, when they want a little help with something, if you're too busy to connect with them on that, you're telling them no. You're telling them no over and over and over and over again. And then the inverse is true. When you pause and genuinely care with curiosity about where they're at in life. I did my team meeting with my service team yesterday, and it's like one of them, his parents' marriage is in difficulty. Another one, it was a beauty to be able to pause and look at him and say, hey, Elias, I just want you to know something. Like, you being here, when I reflect back on some of the best moments as a leader this year, you were always in the room. And you bring something to this team that's not being expressed quantifiably yet in your numbers and what you've produced. But the quality that you've engaged in this team and the way you've helped served in different ways is just outstanding. And to see who he was as a man rise up was like the most rewarding thing ever. And it's like, okay, I need to make these deposits. How do I call life into you? Much like a father, how do I call identity and blessing into this team member to help them be the best version that God has for them? It's just awesome.
It's good, man. You have the gift of what we call encouragement.
I love it. I genuinely care for people.
Yeah.
Like when I look at Churchill USA, our former tagline used to be people are our purpose. And it starts within our team first. If we holistically take care of our team, the byproduct is our clients being taken care of. And the byproduct of that is having the financial ability to impact our community. And you can mess that up by chasing money first and then trying to put it in. And honestly, we were just talking in our meeting, like for 2.5 years, we talked to our cohort in BTA and they're like, oh, that's a great idea. And this is awesome. And you do what? But the money didn't match. You know what I mean? It sounds great, but there was no fruit. And what we're doing really is the long way to do it. We wanted to build a solid foundation, high integrity, high culture, investing in people first, knowing that it was going to take 2-3 years for the byproduct of the fruit to come out. But what I can already see from a leadership seat is that our culture is so deep, our people feel so cared for, that it has a very sturdy foundation. And that was something with BTA that amazed me that you guys built is every event that I went to, the DNA of your staff was the exact same. And I'm like, how do you do this to scale? And how do you guys do it remotely to scale? I know it's just impressive. The genuineness of your people, the authenticity of them to care, to serve, the knowledge base, the skill set, like it was top notch. And so for me, it was like, well, it can be done. How do we do it here? And so you guys, again, plowing forward before us, let me know that, hey, it is possible. It may look different. It may not be instant gratification, but how do we play this long game? And I love it. I love that we fire guys and they still call us to get advice about things because they know we want them to win in life. It's not just about using them. It's about equipping them and empowering them to change their family tree instantly and also change their kids' family tree. And when you do that, people can tell that you want something different and they'll follow you. They trust you. And so it's powerful.
And the values you're talking about, the ones actually we share as an organization, you and I, is we genuinely care for people and we be real. It's like kind of the other one. And it comes from this, honestly, a bit of like a boycotting of the corporate world. I'm just kind of like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't exist in that world. I need to have my own little place. And it's just like, I need to be able to be real and I need to be able to genuinely care for the humans around me because that is life. And business shouldn't be this transactional robotic thing all the time.
It takes maturity though.
Yeah.
Both from you as a leader, there's a risk and a vulnerability. I remember the first time I had to genuinely apologize to my team because I totally blew it. I was just an a-hole. I didn't articulate my emotions well. I'm growing in my emotions. And so I had to bring two of our team members in after a meeting and be like, hey guys, you know what? I completely screwed up with how I approached you. All of this was wrong. Will you give me grace on this? This is new to me and that's not an excuse. It's a reason, but here's what I see that I did. Will you guys forgive me for this? And as a leader, that's scary. We think we're going to get the inverse, that it's going to ruin our authority and people aren't going to listen to us. And in reality, it's testing our maturity and our resolve. Do I have the courage? Do I believe in who I am and what I'm doing, that I can be vulnerable and still lead? And if you do that well, it gives your team the permission to do the same thing. And so we as leaders have to go first. When we apologize, when we fail, when we do anything, I don't know if you know this, right? When I became a small or an entrepreneur business owner, just like money magnifies who a person is, right? Same with being a business owner. It's going to magnify your brokenness and your strengths. And so for 2.5 years, I did my quarterly reviews with my ops manager and my wife. And the reason we did that is because I was a broken man at the time. And I knew as a sales guy, I could talk my way out almost anything to my ops guy. But as a husband, she could read right through me. And I knew I wanted to be better. The companies that only grow to my abilities. And if I wasn't holistically healthy and mature and healed through things, we as an organization were never going to get there. And so I still get nervous. We'll do it again here in a week. And I'll sit down with them like a little kid going to the principal's office, wondering what they're going to call me out on. But the beauty is I can look back and see how me taking that risk and going through the refiner's fire allowed my team to come back through it. And now it's being copied into our new recruits from our current serving specialist while I'm out of town, modeling and shaping that vulnerability and accountability. And it's like, it's worth it. It's really worth it to do the scary thing.
How big is the business now? How much are you guys going to produce this year? I'm just curious, like the growth that's happened over the last 3 years.
That's fun. We are at 4.7 in sales, which is 700K above what we thought we'd do. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to hit 5.5 million in sales. We do all insurance work, so our revenue stream's a little bit slower on that. So we have 4.7 in revenue that's come in. We've been stuck at the 1.2, 1.8 million the last few years trying to build the systems. What works? How do you recruit a high capacity sales guy? We have a young man, Drew. This is his first job he's ever had. It was going to be a pro baseball player. And we took the risk on him because he had the DNA. And this year he's already at 4 million in sales.
Wow.
And it's like, he's doing the damn thing. You know what I mean? And what it was is he feels safe. He feels invested in. He's had the ability to learn. He's very curious and he's just figured it out. And so it's shown us like, no, when you find the right people to invest in, they're not, we look for unicorns. That's one of our pillars, right? What's the thing?
Is that why it's called the unicorn meeting?
Yeah, that's why it's called the unicorn meetings.
And it's one of our rare humans.
it's the beauty of right, unicorns. We studied this. Unicorns showed up in a time of need. Unicorns come when people need health restoration or in a time of tragedy. And the reality of it is we want our whole team to be unicorns within our community. We want them to be unicorns in their marriages as fathers. And so for this guy, we saw the potential in him and wanted to believe in him, and he's doing it. And it's like, no, this proves that it's possible. We have another young man. He's 20 years old. He'll be there in 2 or 3 years. You know what I mean? We got another guy, Elias, who I love. And it's like, he just needs to know that he's safe and that he has what it takes. And like, we believe in you and we invest in you because I see where they'll be in the 2 to 3 year play. I don't need instant gratification. You're showing ownership. You're showing personal responsibility. You're doing all the things. The fruit of that will come. And it's from the Moneyball movie. I love that movie, right? Billy Bean. And it's like, no, I want the culture of the locker room to be right. And I want to know what getting on base looks like. As long as we do those things and we believe in and invest in each other, everything else will take care of itself. And so it's fun. So yeah, to be sitting at five, going in five and a half feels awesome. The reality, knowing that's off of, you know, one or two guys, and then saying, hey, how do we get four more doing this? How do we have a small, tight knit team? How do we figure out how to scale it consistently and easily? I don't need to be the biggest, baddest thing around. I don't want 40 sales guys. I want 5 to 10 guys that I can walk through life with, where we're getting them into financial peace. We're teaching them. We have a full-time marriage counselor on our team. Who does that? Our recruiting and onboarding specialist is a full-time marriage counselor. And it's like, why? Money magnifies what's in these guys. And so if you're a young serving specialist sales guy and you go from making $40,000 to $250,000, $300,000, it's going to magnify all your brokenness. And if we don't equip you to take care of your marriage, how to have hard conversations, if we don't equip you to figure out what your dreams and visions are in life, how to steward your money, how to write a budget, how to manage your time, give you a vision on what it means to be a father and a dad, we failed. All we're going to do is make your life worse. We as a company will get some money off of you. And then in 3 years, you're going to be every other story of being in an addiction, being in divorce, being left out to the side. And it's like, I don't want that. I want the story in 20 years where it's like, hey, you know those skills you taught us? Like, I taught those to my daughter. Thank you for that. That's the legacy we want to leave.
It's an incredible, and it's actually, I'm sure even a lot of people will probably have to take a double take, but like one of your salespeople brings in $4 million a year in company revenue in roofing, which is not large $1 million projects they're booking, right? So it's a testament, I think, to the people you're finding and the leadership you're bringing to them. Let's talk about some of the hard stuff. Let's talk about like...
Let's go.
let's talk about like, given all this good feelings and all this like focus on being great to your people, you also do run a business. There also, I'm sure, have been really hard times that you've had to make hard calls. What is the hardest decision you've ever had to make as a leader of this company?
Starting, it's one. I know that's generic, but that's betting on your own insecurity. Mm-hmm. Hardest calls, firing people. I used to hate firing people, but I learned that's because I didn't have clarity on what I really wanted. And so early on, we'd bring people in. I saw potential in them. I'd keep them for way too long. And the reality of it is I just didn't do my job as the owner. I didn't do my job as a sales coach. And so being able to make those decisions and say, hey, you know what? This isn't the best fit for you. in a loving way. I've learned I had to set that up on the front end. When I don't set that up in the interview process, it's 10 times harder.
Explain what you mean by that. What do you mean by setting that up? And they're like, welcome to the team. We might fire you. What do you mean by that?
That's good. That's good. Setting it up where we holistically want you to be in an environment that you're thriving. If you're coming to work every day and you're hating it, if you have to constantly make excuses about why things aren't happening, your quality of life isn't great. And that's just a sign. And so when we come in and say, hey, here's our vision, we want you to be in a position where you're working within your identity, right? You're working in the way that you're designed. You're finding joy, finding passion, where you have the natural skills or the ability to learn. We want you to thrive and be excited about being a part of what we're doing. If you're not doing that, it's just a wrong fit. And that's a Dave Ramsey thing. He talks about giving them the freedom to find something they love. When you set those expectations of what done looks like on the front end, hey, here's what your first 30, 60, 90 days look like. Here are the skills that we want you to do. Here's the intangible things that we're looking at. Do you study on your own? Do you take notes? Are you curious in the questions that you're asking? Are you taking ownership or are you making justification? When you let them know we're looking for that DNA on the front end, it weeds a lot of people out, which is awesome. And then two, it equips them for the hard conversations. It's no longer a surprise. It's, hey, here's what we're reviewing. Here's the pattern that I'm seeing. Here's some of the things that I think you need to do in order to improve and be successful. At that point, they know you're walking alongside them versus coming head to head. And we set that expectation up. And then these questions aren't hard anymore. I heard a thing the other day and it was talking about A players, B players, and C players, right? And so if an A player quits on you, you're terrified because you just lost something detrimental to your organization. B player, it's an inconvenience. It's like, I got to go find someone. C player, you're relieved. And for me, I'm trying to learn, how do I spot the C players and never hire them to begin with or fire them faster? And that's a Gary V thing, right? Hire fast, fire faster, promote the fastest. Mm-hmm. And that's scary when you're a small company and a young company. That's been super hard the last 3 years because we've just had no money.
Yeah.
We may have done 1.2 million in sales, but that doesn't mean our net profit was good. And when you release someone, that's a huge hole to overcome. So
it's true for almost everybody listening. Like when you have a staff of, I'd say even 50 or less, every person matters and every person has a very vital part to play in the organization. And any transition in that, the owner kind of has to eat and you have to make up the difference and you have to scramble to figure it out. So I'm curious if we could get into details. We don't have to probably say names, but like the hardest call you've ever had to make and how you got through it, how you made the call in the first place, and then how you moved through that when it came to staffing, especially given the kind of culture you're building.
Oh, that's fun. We had a serving, or I guess he was a sales coach. We had a sales coach come in. We've had three bad sales coaches. And when I say bad, it's a hard role to fill, right? Yeah. It's kind of like finding a stepdad, for lack of a better term. I want you to have the DNA of our vision and values. I want you to have the same ability to engage and connect and coach. And so it's a unique role to find. Our first guy, love him, still love him. He felt guilty every time he found damage on a roof because he felt like he was creating the problem. He was phenomenal at building trust with homeowners, phenomenal at teaching and communicating and developing young guys, but felt guilty. So that's a bad fit.
Here's what's important. What did you learn from that? Going through that, looking forward now, what's like one or two key nuggets? You're like, this matters and I need to do this differently, or I need to be aware of this moving forward.
I tried to force a hire one. I allowed my emotion and my gut, I think this could work, to try to solve the problem, which was a red flag that I was operating out of a stress position, right, and not a rest position. I didn't see the caution flags sooner. I saw patterns, but I thought, hey, if we give a little bit more time and give a little bit more coaching, I think we can get there. So that was a miss on my part. I probably could have done better having black and white expectations of what done looks like, so we could have got to the resolve quicker. There's a lot. I probably could have invested more in the friendship, to be honest with you. We talk about personal and professional hats a lot. And I think in the pressure of trying to push, strive, get stuff done, I avoided the relational connection at times. And so I think that could have helped.
You know, the biggest thing you're talking about is actually being more real with yourself through this whole process and just like not letting yourself make excuses for yourself. There's no one really to call you out on your own bullshit. And so you're kind of like, this will work out. Oh, I like this guy. It's good. It's like, you're kind of like talking yourself, you're selling yourself into and we all do this. It's called putting on the rose colored glasses. And when we're under high stress and pressure, we have all the excuses in the world and we emotionally kind of start to capitulate a little bit in ways that do damage us in the future. I see this in myself. I see this in almost every entrepreneur I work with. When pressure is high, emotions are high, we make bad decisions because it's often short-term related stuff versus the long-term. So,
and part of that is, you know, do you switch the seat that you're sitting in and allow others to speak into you? So doing the quarterly review again with my ops guy and my wife puts me in a secondary seat to listen. Mm-hmm. And part of the gauge they constantly ask is like, hey, are you trying to come up with the answer to push it? Or do you truly believe this is the right decision? And you got to find those filters and learn your own decision-making style to be able to know when to pause. And again, as owners and leaders, we always feel like we have to have all the answers, but being able to look at your team and say, hey, I've never been here before either. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I'm feeling. What do you guys see? You're not going to make the decision, but I'm going to invite you into the conversation. And then let's test that hypothesis and go from there. It's challenging, but it's rewarding.
It's challenging to make the decision. It's actually, I don't find it too challenging to know the right answer. I find it hard to be able to actually do it. Because it's like, when you're at, especially when you're under financial stress or like you need to produce a ton of stuff and you don't have enough people or like you're missing in people and you're the stopgap. Emotionally, you're just kind of like short term, you're making decisions for what's best for this month. But you're not practically thinking about what's best for the future. Even though you kind of know the answer, you're ignoring it. And it's like you need someone to pull that out of you a bit and put it into your face. Otherwise, you're just going to play by your own tune until you've realized you've completely sold the future for the present. So,
yeah, that's good. A lot of it too, like our mantra the last 3 years, the first year was fail forward, mm-hmm. right? Second year was fail faster. Third year was do the damn thing. And a lot of this, a lot of learning isn't time-based, it's rep-based. And so if you as a leader can go in and say, hey, I'm going to get fast and efficient and fail as fast as I possibly can with hiring, with firing, with difficult conversations, you'll exponentially increase that time to get to where you need to go. But most of us, what we do is we look at yearly cycles. And so it takes 8 years to get through a cycle versus saying, hey, I'm going to fail 8 times really, really fast this quarter and really learn what I need in it and then move on to the next thing. That's probably the biggest thing I've learned these last 3 years.
It's good. It'll keep happening. It never ends, my friend. It never ends. We fail forward. I still fail forward. Let's talk about fairness and pay. I can imagine, too, for the culture where you genuinely really just want to take care of your people. How do you balance that and decide when someone actually has earned a raise or a bonus and keep that in check? Because I think ultimately people always want to be paid more. I think actually with the cost of living going up over the last few years, it's become a really big point of contention because you also need to take care of your people, but within reason, because if you do too much of that, you jeopardize the stability of the organization. So how do you manage that? Curious to know your perspective on it.
Yeah, we've had to walk that line. The 2 years we started the business, I think everyone knew we weren't thriving. So there was no opportunity for hard conversation. One of our PCs, when they came in, they were just an admin, for lack of a better terminology. I think they were making $24,000 a year. Nothing crazy. That went to 36. And then when it went up again, like $15,000 raises. Part of it is the maturity of looking not where you're at, not with the names of the people in those seats, but where's the organization going to be in 3 to 5 years? And that's the tension. We have a person on our team who we love and want to honor, and they had the courage to say, hey, here's where I'm at. Here's what I need right now. The beauty in that is, again, we had those personal and professional hats. So she wasn't coming to me as an owner and saying, I demand a raise. She was coming to me as a friend and saying, hey, here's where my family's at. And then let's look at the org chart. And so we were able to sit down with them and say, hey, I got 3 things that I kind of want to review with you. Where are you as my friend? What's going on in your life? What are the stresses? Where's your heart? What's going on? Do you feel taken advantage of right now? Which is a big deal to me. They're naturally conflict avoidant per se. And so that's something we've grown this individual in over the last couple of years. So for them to have the courage to even bring up, hey, I need to have this conversation. We celebrated that as friends. And it's like, oh, crap. Now, as the owner, I got to figure out how to do this, right? So, hey, where are you as a friend? How do we honor you for the last 4 to 5 years with our organization? And then holistically from the organization, what's something that's scalable and repeatable? Now, the beauty is we can invite them into this conversation and they're coming up with ideas on, hey, what's the best thing to bonus? where's a fair base? Is it 40, 50, 60, 70,000? What's a fair base for our area? How do we reward the things that we as a company want? And what are those metrics? Again, fair and generous. What do you think needs to be rewarded? What are the qualifiers that we need? The beauty is we know we're creating something new. And so it's not, here's the answer. It's, are we asking the right questions? The challenge then is figuring out as you're building your org chart and trying to hire better talent, people are coming in with higher pay faster. And so you have to balance the emotions of someone who came in with less, and now someone's getting hired at the exact dollar amount that they're in.
Mm-hmm. I've seen this
and
a lot.
So there's maturing in that. There's inviting them in and seeing it. There's honor. There's end of year bonuses for us. Again, Dave Ramsey, Financial Peace. Hey, how do we invest into your retirement? And that's more internal organization. From a serving specialist sales guy structure, like that's pretty black and white. We give a 40K base and percentage kickers based on top of that. We give the 40K on the front end because we want them to know we believe in you. We want to be a bridge for you to go from where you're at to where you need to be to produce on your own. We're higher end sales, so it's not a quick one and done. It's not a $17,000 shingle roof. You get the contract signed the same day. Our average job size right now is $142,000. And so these are big projects. We know that pipeline to get turned on is going to take 3 to 6 months. And so we give them a base and then we give percentage kickers as they hit different metrics that are built-in bonus structures as they go. We just did a Q3 bonus. So, hey, sales guys, here's your stretch goals that you came up with. They picked the numbers. I had our floor. They picked their stretch. And then we told them, hey, we'll give you 1% if you hit that. And one of them hit it. He's going to get a big fat check. And so the dance is how do you honor those who are generators financially? And then how do you balance out the internal role of those managing the tasks? Because you need both. We talk of them being offense and defense. Hey, offense sales guys are going to produce. Internal team defense, they're actually producing it. How do you balance both of those things? And it's tender and sensitive, but when you look at it with curiosity and saying, hey, here's what we think's best. What do you see? Here's where you're at as a person. Here's where you're at with your scale set. Now let's build out a scale set so that we can tier new people coming in. I don't know if we're doing it great. We're doing it for the first time right now, right? Yeah, it's first time we've had 3 quarters in a row net positive. And it's like, we actually get to come up with these questions. And so in our last quarterly all unicorn meeting, we framed out to our team, hey, we're in a season of pruning. We're in a season of evaluating. Here's what that means. We in our seats are going to feel friction.
I'll say this because I've also been through this and I've seen this with a lot of our members, but you are in that place of just starting to make that a reality. Introducing, I would say, pay bands to roles that are well-defined is an important step for any organization. And it sounds like for you, the sales side has become more easily definable because it's been around since the beginning. And so you're trying to figure this out with other roles, but it is very important, I think, to objectively establish a pay band for a given role and then look at, like you just said, within that unique individual skill set, what they bring to the table, where they fit within that pay band. So there's still some subjectivity to it for the person, but the role itself has a bottom and a top cap to it and a structure to what it is. And I think, you know, clarity is massive for this. And if you can describe this to people before they even start the job, at least they know exactly what they're getting into. At least they know what their mortgage costs are going to be, what their upside over time is going to look like. And it's kind of the balls back in their court. It's when it's in the owner's court that it can get messy because people come to you and you become the thing between them and their dreams in life versus, hey, I've set the structure is here. You are the only thing between you and what you want to achieve and allow them to go for it. So,
and it's messy to grow through that.
Yeah.
There's so many times we create what we think is good and we've drastically overpaid people. That's like,
it happens
can't do
all
that.
The time, especially when when you describe your care for people, I could see too how that, and I'm not, I should throw myself under the bus too. Like I am also a deep feeler who cares deeply for the people on our team. But it's not sustainable if it's always driven by how you feel or how they feel. It has to be structurally set up. And if without it, feelings get hurt, people get upset and you create a larger problem than what you originally just wanted to do was care for people, right? So
yep, and that's true. You avoid things, you delay things. And there's a difference between going to people and saying, hey, we don't know yet. You know what I mean? So one of the individuals I went to him like, hey, this is a Q4 thing, but I want to begin to have the conversations. Mm-hmm. Let's really figure out, hey, what are we trying to solve and why? Here's my seat. what's scalable from an organization. Just because we've had one good year doesn't mean we can build an org chart off of that year. But at the same time, want to honor the fact that you had an increased workload and see you in the midst of that and see how you've walked along this journey. And so, yeah, it's risky. So if anyone has any tips, just hit me up.
I recommend pay bands. Let's Google the word or ChatGPT the word pay bands, and you could start there. Self-leadership. Let's talk a bit about stress and anxiety as a leader, because I can only imagine over the last 3 years, the ups and downs that you've had, especially if you haven't been profitable every single quarter, every single year. How have you managed this? And I think you do a great job of this. Just knowing you, your energy is always high. You're always excited. And I get that, like, that's just a part of who you are, but there's also a part of you that probably goes through some hard stuff. And like, how do you manage that as a leader?
Yeah. Thank you. It's all a facade. So appreciate that. Honestly, when we started this as a sales guy, it was fun because it's on you and you're getting instant gratification of commission checks. So that's fun. What I didn't realize is how broken I was in the season I was going to go into when I said yes. And so I discovered I'm a natural escapist. I want to avoid stressful situations. I want to find ways to turn my brain off. I also have a natural addictive personality type, which can be a positive or a negative. And so early on, my stress coping mechanism was drinking old fashions and watching Netflix until wee hours of the night because I was just trying to get away from it. The reality of it is that brings a lot of bad things into your life, right? And so it's hitting that broken spot and saying, okay, who am I? Where am I? Went through multiple years of counseling, realized I did not have words to articulate my emotions. And so I never felt heard, never felt seen within those things, right? We all want to be fully known, fully seen, and fully loved. And when you don't know how to express emotions without using blame and shame, if you just did this, then I wouldn't feel this way, versus learning how to say, hey, here's how I feel in this moment. I was self-sabotaging myself all over the place and trying to find the only good fruit that I could see as justification of that I'm doing okay. And so it took failing. It took hitting rock bottom. It took jeopardizing my family and my health to figure out, like, this isn't me. Who am I? And so I had to learn how to put healthy flows in. Part of that is I got big into cold plunge. The reason is you're just in fight or flight. You know what I mean? But it lowered my heart rate. It lowered my anxiety. I learned that if I'm not consistently working out, I have built up stress. Mm-hmm. I learned to say yes to the tender moments with my kids and say, hey, it's a blessing to be able to, one, want them to come lay in bed and read a story. You know what I mean? And so that was the beginning of saying, hey, what are these flows? I do great when I journal. I do great when I feel like I accomplished something in the beginning of the day. I do better with clarity. And so again, BTA, learning how to do time blocks, learning how to identify tasks and figure out, hey, what's the most important thing I can get done today, allowed me to feel accomplished. And then recently this past year, to be honest with you, I helped my kids in their BJJ class, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Yeah. My kids don't even go to some of the classes anymore, but I still coach because that's the only hour I have in a week where I'm not in charge and I just get to serve someone. And I take so much joy in managing the timer and then putting out the little rubber dots. I have no idea why, but it's the fact that I get to serve someone else. There's no major responsibility. I just get to be there and engage and connect with these kids and serve my professors. It is the most rewarding thing. And then within that is just learning to be real. One, opening the door to my sales team, my team, but two, like having hard conversations with people and saying, hey, this is really where I'm at and reaching out. I think we as men, we as leaders, we all long for someone to give us permission to go first. And so when we do that, it creates vulnerability. It creates that sense of true connection. And I think that's one of the things you and I have enjoyed in our relationship. I think every conversation you and I have first had was deep, meaningful, life, marriage, kids, childhood. Like, here's where I'm really at. And I'm like, dude, you're my guy. You're willing to share these things? Let's know each other so well.
At a roofing conference, big beards, and just talking about the deep parts of our heart. It's massive. Dude, and thank you for saying what you've just said, because I think publicly, to announce that, I think is very, you know, it's ballsy of you to do. And I think that for most people listening, I think they get it. I think as an entrepreneur, we all go through this. And I think we'll continue to go through it because we constantly put ourselves in situations that we probably weren't prepared for when we started them, and we have to grow up to that challenge.
The lie is that we're alone. Yeah. Right. And that's why we share it. The lie is that we're alone and no one else feels this way. And I've shared this with some of the BTA guys, right? Like every winter summit that I go to, there's always someone whose marriage is falling apart. There's always someone struggling with suicide. There's always struggling with doubt and insecurity and bankruptcy and parent issues. And it's like, they have nowhere to go. And so we put on the facade and the mask of, look at my numbers and look at my net profit. And this is great. And it's like, that's not who you are. Mm-hmm. That's not who you are. And so for me, it's been trying to stay true in those things really helped me out. And my wife and I, when it's busy season, like we call each other, text each other and say, hey, how much battery do you got? I'm at 60%. What are you at? And as long as she's at 40, we have 100% to take care of it. You know what I mean? But if not, then we know, hey, what do we need to shift right now? And just learning those flows and learning, hey, what do you need? I have enough right now. What do you need to tend to and care for each other? Again, sharing emotions and feelings. I know that's not what we as men are supposed to say, but it's like, hey man, I'm feeling kind of lonely right now. That's completely different conversation than going to your wife and be like, why are you rejecting me? What's wrong? Don't you see all that I do? And it's like, I just kind of miss you. You know what I mean? Like, do you want to watch the show together tonight? Like, learning to figure out what you actually need has been the key. And I think for so long I was chasing substitutes. And I think if you boil down mental health, stress life, it's really determining, hey, what is it that I really need? Do I need to go to the gym or do I need to sit outside and look at the stars? And most of us don't know.
Yeah, we especially when we're busy, we'll take the fast route and then we'll get a habit formed out of that. And then that habit will persist. And then it becomes like this little button we press, especially I've seen it myself. It's like you hit it on weekends and you're just kind of like, this has been a long week. Let's have, like, you drink old fashioned. I drink old fashions, right? So it's like, let's have a little machine that makes me old fashions. And I'm like, let's have an old fashioned, right? And it's just like, wow, how many weekends has that been the start to the weekend? And is that actually truly the right way to spend time? And same thing, I've got three young kids at home and it's just kind of like, there's so much joy in being with them. And to turn to that is actually, it's hard to say, but it's actually not always natural. It's just like, okay, the kids don't seem like the release. Actually, this thing that this old fashioned Netflix, whatever it is, it seems like the thing. And yet it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't go anywhere productive and it burns you out. And slowly you have to get real with yourself, just like you've described. So for anyone listening, I mean, I think the message behind this piece is just like, we get it. I mean, Blake, thank you for sharing. Like, I think everyone, including me, have been through exactly what you've just described at some level. And we've all got different vices and we can all probably name them. And they might be different for different people. And that's totally fine. But as an entrepreneur, I think it's an abnormal level of stress and newness that we're constantly thrust into. And it's exciting and it's awesome. And I don't think most of us would have it any other way. But if that's going to be the way we're going to live our lives, if we actually want to be an entrepreneur for our career, not just for a few years, this is a very important piece that has to be thought through and constantly tended to, because you could do a great job for 1 year and figure your whole life out and then slip right back in the next because you let go. So.
And it's the culture that you're modeling. As I learn how to do it, I can look at my guys and do the same thing. You know, and I could see we send our guys to hotels with their wives. Like, hey, you need a break. We got this really fancy hotel for you guys for a couple of days. Like, get out of here. I can tell you're burnt out. All your GSRs, you're talking about tension within your spouse or stress with your kids and you have connected. And it's like, okay, if I can do this for myself, I need to model it for you as well. But it's for me, at least, I don't know about anybody else. For me, it's hard to give myself permission to do that. Yeah. I want to do it last. But the reality of it is when you've been grinding and trying to build something for multiple years, you got to learn to put yourself first and not feel guilty. And it's like, again, I just went on a 3-week 20th anniversary. I feel guilty coming back and talking to my team about it. I don't know if that's healthy or not. It's weird to be like, oh, this was fun and this was awesome. And inside of me, I'm like, oh, I don't feel good about this. It's weird.
You said something important. You're giving your team the permission to do and feel the same. Which, you know, I'll say this, for many years, I used to pride myself on how hard I would work. You know, we all called it on my team, Danny Octane. It's like, man, Danny's just like motors everything and everybody all the time. Let's go. Right. And I burned a lot of people out. And I found that, especially when I was running franchises years ago, like my first year franchisees loved it. My second and third year franchisees could barely keep up anymore because they were burnt out. And I was burnt out too. It wasn't even that, like, it was like good for me. But the culture became all about that hard work, which was great at the beginning, But to have like somebody work with you for 7, 8, 9 years, there needs to be some semblance of lifestyle involved that they have permission to live as well. And I've learned that over the years. Like I've got people at BTA now that have worked with me for 7 years. And I'm like, look, man, like if you're going to actually work here, like we need to make sure that you have a good life, that you have good balance, that you have a good way to save money, that you get your career. And I'm not in charge of all these things, but if I'm not enabling this in your life, then I'm the problem and I need to get the fuck out of the way. And if I'm the enabler of good things, then let's go. Let's do this for as long as it lasts. And let's make sure that what you build in your career is equally as magnificent as what you help us build here in our organization.
So what was your journey going from the drive hard identity is found in what you're producing?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, let's go, go, go. Let's conquer the world. This is who I am. To shift over and say, okay, there's a cadence and a pace to this. Because at the same time, you could feel in those moments that you're doing a disservice, you're failing, you're not doing enough, right? What was that journey like?
There's been multiple because I keep slipping back into the hard work, right? So the first one was when I was probably 25, 26. I actually went away to Thailand for 2 months and just cleared my brain. And actually, so funny, like I don't even know if people in Thailand that met with me then would know I ran a business. Like I was in bare feet and I had a big beard and I said black feet because I wore no shoes for a month and just living in the jungle. But I got perspective. And actually what happened is after 2 months of being there, my girlfriend at the time, my now wife, who'd been with me since I was 16 years old, was back at home. And it was kind of like, I didn't miss the business. I didn't miss the money that I'd made. I didn't miss anything. All I missed was Carrie. And all I wanted to do was get back to her. And it was interesting because she'd come along with me since we were 16 in high school, kind of like, you know, living with me while we moved to different cities to run this college pro painting thing and be, you know. And I never put much stock into that relationship. I was kind of like, she's just coming along for the ride. And yet being away for those 2 months, that was the only thing I actually cared about. That was the only thing that of value that I had left in my life that I actually truly was looking forward to coming home to. And I never forgot that. And I'm just kind of like, look, Danny, like things in business especially seem super important because of the volume that they're turned up in your day and how loud they feel. But when you shed all of that, and I think what you've said too, it's like when you shed all that away and you just look at who you are as a person, business doesn't rank that high. Like your family, like it's your faith, your family, your health, like there's other things, but it's easy to avoid those or just not even notice those because of the level of like blaring speaker issues and opportunity and money and cool things that happen in business. You forget it. So I had to get away. I had to get away to remind myself of that. And to this day, I still remember that very vividly because I still fall into the go, go, go mode. And then I have to go back to those memories and those thoughts.
Yeah. Oftentimes it's the separation that allows distinction from what was to what is. Mm-hmm. And so often in businesses, again, I just told my team, hey, the blessing was that I had the ability to get away. Yeah. And we have to carve out that time to allow what doesn't need to stay to sift down. And so I think that's powerful. I think that's what I'd say to everybody starting a business. As scary as it sounds to peel away for a week or 3 days into the mountains and just decompress, cut off your phone, cut off and just be and sit, it will give you perspective on everything that you've accomplished and bring clarity on everything that you're going to do.
That's great.
It's good, man.
Blake, is there anything else you want to say? Either just like maybe if you look back at when you started this thing in 2020 to now, is there anything that you would want to give your earlier self some advice on for those listening?
Start sooner. That's exactly what I say. Start sooner. No, I think part of it, right? The book, The Slight Edge, consistent decisions made over a long period of time end up to be compound growth. And so I think looking back at myself, it would be, hey, you have what it takes to start it. Who are the people you need around to support it? And what's the healthiest way to get through it? And I think that's the key. I think that's where BTAs help us out, not only within the templates and the curriculum that you guys have, but in the community of other entrepreneurs that you're allowed to glean from. I would say build friendships sooner. Most of us view each other as competitors, even though we're not. Mm-hmm. There's enough to go around. It's not scarcity mindset. It's not a zero-sum game. Take the risk and be vulnerable sooner, right? Listen, try to give value versus asking for something. And the byproduct of that will be the things that you want for and desire. And so that's what I'd say. Find friends, be real, fail fast, figure it out, stay healthy. Listen to your wife, listen to your team members. They see things you don't. And I think that's what you were saying earlier, is our head gets down into what we're building and producing, that we don't have a good mirror reflecting on where we're at. And so for me, when I was going through my hard times, I would sit in here with my ops guy doing my quarterly talking about life, and I'd feel like I'm in the same spot. And his words were, you're on a spiral staircase. It looks like you're in the same spot, but you're getting healthier and you're growing. And it's like, that's the advice I needed to keep going. And then to be able to test it, you know, a year, year and a half out, it's like, no, I'm a healthier, different man than I was when I started this thing. And even if this business fails, I'm grateful for the fact that I am healthier than I am when I started. That's powerful. When you look at it as self-development, as discipleship, you're going to win no matter what you do.
We don't have to go all the way into this, but there's something you just said that's so important to remember, which is like, we are not our businesses.
100%.
Yeah. And it's almost everything we just talked about. When you are your business, that's when true anxiety takes over. That's when short-term decisions start creeping in. That's when you lose yourself. And it's the ability to have that separation and confidence in that separation that matters. And I think it matters as much as we're operating, almost more actually when we're finally retiring or shutting down or selling or moving on. Because if your identity is your business, you lose yourself. And I've seen this not in myself yet, but in older people who have run businesses and moved on. They called it the desert, which was such an interesting way to put it. They're like, I feel like I'm in the desert at this point, and everything is sand around me. They have all the money in the world, but they're destitute because all of their identity was wrapped up in the thing that they sold. So anyway,
it's powerful. And that's what I'd say, invest in people. Mm-hmm. People aren't sand. If you create true life change at the end of those 50 years, it's not going to be about the dollar amount you have in your bank account or how many vacation homes you have. It's going to be about the legacies that you've changed and the people that chose to partner with you. And they'll be grateful for it.
That's a really good quote that exists on the internet somewhere. I've seen that many, many times, but it's very true. So thank you, Blake.
I didn't know I was quoting something.
So I don't know awesome. Either. I feel like I've heard that advice. It's good. Okay, dude, that was awesome chat. Thanks for just getting into what you have. Thanks for being vulnerable in this. And I think this will help a lot of people listening just to kind of, I think, ground themselves in what they're doing every day, because we're all in this together, man. So, okay, I'll let you get back to your day.
Love it, my friend.
Okay, see you, Blake. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.